In my 30-plus years of being a meteorologist, I can't ever recall a year like this one as far as extreme weather events go, not only for the U.S., but for the world at large. I think you could go perhaps back into the 1930s and find some similar type of years, but in my lifetime, this year certainly takes the prize for the most extreme weather.
Well, let's walk through the year in wild weather here. And I want to start early February, February 5th. Big snowstorm hit the mid-Atlantic in Washington. They were calling it Snowmageddon. What do you make of that big snowstorm?
Yeah, Snowmageddon by itself was not that remarkable, but Snowmageddon was accompanied by at least two other massive snowstorms that all tracked along the same portion of the U.S. mid-Atlantic coast. And by the time the snowstorm onslaught was over, that area had the record amount of snow ever recorded in a winter along that stretch. And they were having roof collapses and flooding problems, and it was really an incredible set of storms that affected that area.
Now, there was a curious event just outside the Capitol building where staff members for Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, who is of the opinion that global warming is a hoax, they went out onto the lawn there and built an igloo, which they called Al Gore's igloo, and said that these snowstorms were evidence that global warming was false. What do you think of their connection between that extreme weather event and their view of global warming?
A warmer atmosphere potentially has more water vapor in it. And in fact, if you look at the history of the United States over the past 100 years, there's evidence that the climate is a little bit too cold as far as optimal amounts of cold weather to create snow. You've heard the expression, too cold to snow. Well, that's absolutely true. If it's excessively cold, there isn't as much moisture in the atmosphere, and you don't get as heavy as snow. It's right when the temperature gets up near freezing that you get your heaviest snows. And if you look at the past 100 years, the evidence is that warmer than average winters tend to produce more snow. Just the length of time you get that snow, I mean, the length of the season is reduced.
Now, in March, late March, New England saw a series of rainstorms that just seemed to never stop. What did you think of that event?
That was really remarkable. Rhode Island had their wettest March on record, and not coincidentally, they also had their warmest March on record. So we had a surge of very warm air come up the East Coast in March, and that helped contribute to the record rains there because warmer air can hold more water vapor, and that water vapor precipitated out into just some really ridiculous amounts of rain. I think 16 inches of rain in 1 month in Rhode Island from some of those storms.
Did that big rain event and the big snow events we saw just a month earlier, what did they have in common?
Well, what happened is that you had the storm track set up along that stretch of the U.S., and it's pretty typical that in a given season, you get a preferred storm track. The jet stream sets up in a location where it tends to stay. It gets locked in place, and the storms ride along the crest of the jet stream. And it just so happened that because of the positioning of the jet stream, you happen to get your heaviest rain and or snow events right along that stretch there. Now, there's also another interesting feature of this past winter, is that when you look at the pressure patterns between the Icelandic low, which is a semi-permanent low pressure area over Iceland, and then the Bermuda high, the difference in pressure between those two areas was at its record level, at least since 1950 when we started collecting these statistics. It's a well-known climate fluctuation called the North Atlantic Oscillation. So it was at its most extreme value on record. So that extreme value of the pressure helped influence the weather patterns over the U.S. and helped contribute to the record amounts of precipitation that we observed.
Do we know why, or do we have a good guess as to why that oscillation was greater than it has been in the past?
It's been shown that in years when we have high levels of sea ice in the Arctic melting, that is the ice that floats on the ocean, we tend to weaken the temperature difference between the equator and the pole. When you have a weaker temperature difference, it tends to weaken the jet stream so it doesn't blow as fast, and that enables cold air to spill southwards towards the U.S. and towards Western Europe. And when that happens, it tends to cause this pressure pattern we were talking about between the Icelandic low and the Bermuda high, and helps cause not just colder than average conditions over the eastern U.S. and over western Europe, but also exceptionally warm conditions over the Arctic. So we had kind of an upside-down winter. Over the U.S., it was the coldest winter in 25 years, but over Canada, it was the warmest winter on record, and they had to truck in snow for the Winter Olympics.
Wow. So this may be related to the rate of ice melt in the Arctic.
Absolutely, because when you melt a lot of that sea ice, it takes a while for it to refreeze in the fall, and that means there's a tremendous amount of heat in the Arctic, and that extra heat will perturb the large-scale atmospheric patterns and impact the jet stream in the course of the future winter weather.
That's pretty amazing. Well, moving on through our weather calendar here, in early May, May 1st and into May 2nd, Tennessee saw an enormous flood. Give me a sense of the scale of that rain event.
That rain event was equivalent to a 1-in-1,000-year event. The Tennessee area has never seen a natural disaster like that. You could have to go back to the Civil War to look at any kind of disaster that impacted Tennessee as great. And the city of Nashville was basically underwater. And they've never seen that kind of flooding in the state of Tennessee. So it really was a remarkable event. And I might add that the weather conditions that accompanied that event, again, it was a surge of unusually warm air. Record high temperatures were set all up and down the East Coast on the few days accompanying that storm event. And again, when you have record high temperatures, you can have record amounts of water vapor present in the atmosphere capable of causing heavy rains.
It seemed like it was the summer of floods, not just in the United States, but internationally. There were devastating floods. What did you make of what happened in China in late May and early June, and then Pakistan in July?
Yes, China and Asia in general had an amazing amount of flooding events happen. China probably had its most damaging set of floods in its history, not its deadliest, because back in the 30s and so on, before they built all these dams, they had some floods that killed millions. But certainly the damage from this year's flooding is going to be a record in Asia. And in Pakistan, the flooding they had there was completely remarkable as far as the impact it had on that nation. It was that nation's Katrina. It's worst natural disaster in history.
It seemed like the heat records were just falling left and right. Again, is that just me and my layperson's impression, or were they really just breaking records left and right?
Yeah, well, it was the hottest year on record, at least the past 12 months. If we look back starting November of last year to November of this year, there's never been a 12-month period on planet Earth that has seen that kind of heat before. So it makes sense that if you're increasing the baseline of your temperature, you're going to hit more extreme values. And that's exactly what we saw this summer. We had 18 nations set new all-time extreme records. That's unofficially, but we had Russia, both the European portion and the Asian portion, hit their warmest temperature on record. The record in Pakistan I mentioned, and Southeast Asia had its hottest temperature on record when Burma hit over 116 degrees this summer.
You put together an interesting tally of the nations that set or tied all-time heat records and how much of the planet we're talking about. It's a big chunk of the whole Earth.
Yeah, it's 20% of the Earth's land area are covered by the countries that set extreme records. Now, that's not to say that every point in those countries set an extreme record, but certainly in Russia, a good portion of Russia hit their all-time extreme records. China as well. They had extremely hot temperatures in China, although they missed by just 1 degree setting their all-time extreme record. So the warm temperatures covered a record amount of the Earth's surface. We've never seen 20% of the Earth's surface experience their all-time record high in 1 year.
The Russian heat wave drew a lot of attention. What did you find remarkable about what Russia experienced this summer?
Well, the causes of the Russian heat wave were that the jet stream got locked into place and didn't move. That's a fairly common thing to have happen in the atmosphere. It's called a blocking pattern, and it's not thought to be due to climate change. The jet stream gets stuck all the time, and we get these sort of long-term droughts or long-term cold spells that last over a month, frequently over planet Earth. But what was remarkable is the intensity of this one. Once the Russian drought started, it just kept intensifying until it went off the charts. Moscow had never hit 100 degrees Fahrenheit before in its history, and it hit that temperature five times in the span of just 10 days during the Russian heat wave. So the heat wave kind of fed upon itself. Once it got hot there, that dried out the soil and made it feed back to the jet stream pattern itself and intensified it. So that drove even more heating, which drove even less moisture in the soil. So it was just a really phenomenal amount of heating that hit Russia. I never thought I'd see Moscow be enveloped in smoke from forest fires and be hitting 100 degrees Fahrenheit every day for days on end.
And in the United States, we also saw heat records falling throughout the summer and on the West Coast in late summer and into September. Tell me a bit about what you found of interest in terms of the record heat in the U.S. this summer.
Well, the record heat was concentrated in the Mid-Atlantic region again, so not only did they have Snowmageddon, but they had their hottest summer on record in the D.C. area. So maybe the legislators there were trying to be told something. I don't know.
You compiled a list of the record high and record low temperatures that we've seen so far this year. What do those numbers tell us?
Well, they tell us kind of what we'd expect to be seeing. We still get both record highs and record lows, but the amount of record highs greatly exceeds the amount of record lows. In the U.S., it's been about a factor of 2.5 to 1. We've had more than twice as many record highs set as record lows. So it still gets cold in the winter here. I mean, the average temperature of the U.S. has only risen about 1 degree Fahrenheit since 1970. So whereas in the past, maybe it would have gotten to 20 below in Detroit, now it can only get to 19 below. So not a lot of difference, but it is noticeable enough that you will be seeing more record highs and record lows, and that's exactly what we've been seeing this year.
So if the climate weren't changing, what would you expect to see in that ratio of record high to record low temperatures?
Well, I think it would still be the record highs would be maybe 1.5 times as much as the record lows. And that's because of the fact that we're developing our areas where we have these thermometers. There's a so-called urban heat island effect that does impact the temperatures where these thermometers are.
But this fits with what you'd expect to see from a changing climate that's warming.
Yeah, absolutely. Climate models predict exactly what we're seeing. We see more extreme hot weather events than cold weather events. And the climate models also predict that we're going to see more extreme precipitation events than we have been seeing, disproportionately to kind of how it affects the means. The extremes change much more than the means. You'd expect to see a doubling or a tripling of the number of really rare events, the ones that we really care about, due to climate change over the coming decades.
Now, I want to talk a bit about the hurricane season. Hurricanes have a kind of special place in your heart. Is that right?
Well, I used to be a hurricane hunter. I spent 4 years in Miami working for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, flying as a meteorologist on their hurricane research aircraft. So I flew into a number of intense hurricanes and still follow hurricanes very closely.
So here we are just at the end of the hurricane season. How did it shape up? It seemed to me, from someone who only pays attention when they happen to hit the U.S., there wasn't that much going on.
There was not much going on. We were very, very fortunate. This was a very strange season because it set record levels of activity in some regards. But yet, as far as the U.S. was concerned, we saw almost nothing. We had one minimal tropical storm with 40-mile-per-hour winds hit Florida and cause no damage. We had another storm move over South Texas from Mexico, and that didn't really count as a direct hit. And typically, we would expect about one-third of all of the systems that form in the Atlantic to hit the U.S. We had 19 named storms this year, 12 hurricanes, and 5 intense hurricanes, and yet the U.S. saw only one tropical storm hit the shores of the country. We should have had 6 named storms, 4 of them being hurricanes and 2 of them being intense hurricanes. So there's never been a season like this that's been so active. In fact, it was the 3rd most active in 160 years, but yet not have any impact on the U.S. Really strange season.
Tell me about this phenomenon of simultaneous storms.
Well, we had 2 simultaneous Category 4 hurricanes in the Atlantic this year. That's only the 2nd time that's ever happened in the 160 years we've been looking at records. And at one point, we had 3 simultaneous hurricanes in the Atlantic. That doesn't happen very often. That's only happened, I think, 8 other times. So a lot of activity going on all at once. And it was interesting because the activity started relatively late. We only had 3 of our 19 storms up until the last week of August, and then there was just this explosion of activity. We had 4 Category 4 storms occur in just 20 days. That was a record. We've never seen that before. And what's really interesting is that this activity, this intense activity period, started right when the Russian drought broke. So there was this jet stream pattern that had been locked in place all summer, giving Russia its incredibly hot temperatures, and Pakistan, incidentally, its record rains. And when that pattern broke, boom, it was like a switch had been turned on in the Atlantic, and now all of a sudden we saw this hurricane activity go.
So looking back on this year of extreme weather, how much of this can we attribute to climate change?
Well, that's the big question, of course. But I think the question is ill-posed because humans have fundamentally modified the atmosphere. The atmosphere can't be thought of anymore as being isolated from human impacts. I think you can turn the question around as well and say, well, we can't rule out anything being due to climate change. If you play backgammon or you play craps, you roll 2 6-sided dice and you come up with a number. And the probability of getting a snake eyes or a double sixes is 1 in 36. So you can think of the weather and climate system as a similar type of operation. You roll the dice and you get a particular roll. On average, you'll get a 7 because that comes up most often. You'll get a 7 6 out of 36 times, 1 out of 6. Now, every now and then, you're going to roll snake eyes, get a really cold year, or you roll double sixes and get a really hot year like this year. But what I think has happened is now we've put an extra spot on one of these die. Now you can roll a 2 through 7 instead of just a 1 through 6. So now when you roll the 2 dice, you can roll a 13. I think that's kind of what happened this year. We rolled a 13. And that's how we're going to detect climate change. It's those extremes that change the most radically and are the most noticeable and also have the biggest impact on humans.
Hmm. We're loading the dice here.
We're loading the dice.
So that's kind of a looking back approach, if you will, looking at this year and comparing it to years past and climate regime past. But what about looking forward? What does the weather of 2010 tell us about the weather we can expect in the future as the climate continues to change?
2010 could very well be the sign that the climate is beginning to grow unstable. So this year makes me nervous. It really does. I haven't ever seen a year like this before in my 30 years watching the weather, and I don't think it's any coincidence that we saw it this year. I think the amount of change humans are doing to the atmosphere is beginning to catch up to us. It's getting noticeable now, and it's only going to increase on average. We're going to see these 1 in 100-year flood-type events and 1 in 100-type heat wave events become much more common. I think by mid-century, the 2050s and so on, you can expect at least a factor of 2 or 3 increase in these extreme events.
Hmm. When we look to mid-century, my frame of reference now is about my kids. I've got 2 little girls age 2 and 4, and so I think, so by the time they're approaching my age, This is the climate that they're going to have. This is what we are bequeathing by way of weather and climate. Is it fair to say that 2010 is a snapshot of what we're giving our children, our grandchildren?
I think 2010 is going to be looked at as being pretty mild as far as the weather conditions that we should see by 2050. I expect that the climate is going to grow unstable. the Arctic sea ice loss is going to become so great that there's basically going to be no sea ice in the Arctic in the summer, and that's going to significantly change the weather patterns that we observe over the Northern Hemisphere. We're going to see things we've never seen before. We're going to see heat waves like the 1930s for the U.S., the most extreme heat wave in the past, and record drought conditions as well. And on the other hand, because there's going to be a lot more heat in the air, you'll see a lot of moisture as well. You're going to see record rains and record flooding events. And 2010 is not going to be that unusual by 2050. So that's what we're bequeathing to our kids. And I have a 14-year-old as well that I think is going to be looking back fondly on the, you know, years like 2010, saying, you know, it wasn't so bad then.
Dr. Jeff Masters of Weather Underground, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.